The Great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company presents Colonel Goodbody in a talk on our daily food. This morning, the Colonel will tell us about a group of school children out in Michigan whose theme song was, "We Want Hot Lunches." Colonel Goodbody.
Good morning. Mr. Announcer, I should have told you that it was the parents rather than the children who demanded the hot lunches. To begin at the beginning, some years ago at one of the Parent-Teacher Association meetings held in the suburb of Northwood at Royal Oak, Michigan, the mothers decided that they were all through packing lunches. They declared that they wanted their children to have well-cooked, hot lunches served amid pleasant surroundings, and what's more, they wanted their children to have plenty of time to eat those lunches.
What did the teachers think about it?
Oh, the teachers were willing. In fact, the teachers all agreed that they'd like hot lunches, too.
Is this a country school, Colonel?
Well, not like the country school I taught out in Kansas, Judge, no. This particular suburban school in Michigan was, I should say is, a modern brick building with a gymnasium, a library, an auditorium, all well equipped. But there was no lunchroom. And you know how quickly the noon hour flies by when a child has a half mile or a mile to walk home for his lunch.
Yes, and there are always so many distractions along the way. Ever notice, Colonel, how kids will stop and watch somebody fix a flat tire or get a balky car started? And if there's a steam shovel digging in the street, why, there's no telling when the young loiterers will get home.
Exactly. There are some things that children simply have to superintend. Well, when they finally do get home, it's time to start back to school again. So lunch must be eaten in haste, or there'll be a tardy mark to spoil a good record. Of course, the children of Northwood didn't have to go home at noon, but if they stayed at school, they had only an old-fashioned cold lunch.
Old-fashioned, Colonel? There are many youngsters who still carry cold lunches to school.
Yes, but I think I may safely say that the cold lunch is becoming old-fashioned and out of date. It's being frowned upon by parent-teacher associations.
Colonel, I know I'm delaying your story, but how big is the parent-teacher association?
Well, Judge, since you're so fond of impressive statistics, I'm happy to tell you that the National Congress of Parents and Teachers has almost 1.5 million members. A local branch of the PTA, or Parent-Teacher Association, was responsible for this hot lunch project I'm telling about this morning. And it's just one of a multitude of important achievements of local organizations. 6 weeks after the women of Royal Oak, Michigan, made up their minds to have hot lunches for their children, the lunches were being served.
Take only 6 weeks to get started?
That's all. Mrs. Jones, the president of the Parent Teacher Association, appointed a committee to look into the matter. And in just 6 weeks, the lunchroom was in operation.
Must have been an efficient committee.
It was. One member, Mrs. Gibson, was a nurse and dietitian. Another, Mrs. Thompson, was a former domestic science teacher. The chairman, Mrs. McDonald, knew how to get things done. The committee went to work, and they found a large, airy classroom that could be made into a cafeteria. Then they visited several stores to get the best possible prices for lunchroom equipment. And finally, they studied modern school lunchrooms in Detroit. They even made a list of lunches that could be served for 12 cents a child.
Colonel, you say the parents and the teachers had agreed to have hot lunches. And we can take it for granted that the children favored the idea. But what about the school board? In my day, the school board was all-powerful.
Well, Judge, a committee of women who want hot school lunches for their children is also all-powerful. And when an all-powerful committee visits an all-powerful school board, they just have to cooperate. Besides, in this case, the school board was sympathetic. One member, Mr. Lloyd Clausen, the mayor of Royal Oak, has two children who attend Northwood School. And another member of the board, Mr. J.C. Austin, sends four children to school. Well, when the school board read the committee's report pointing out the urgent need for a cafeteria, they passed favorably upon the measure. What's more, this practical school board agreed to purchase a double-drain sink. The person in charge of this Michigan lunchroom is Mrs. Tyrrell. The cafeteria has always been self-supporting, thanks to her excellent management.
How many children does it serve, Colonel?
About 250, Judge. The student helpers are boys who volunteer to set the tables before school starts at 8:30 in the morning and to serve and clear away during the noon hour. For their work, they get their lunches free. Early in the morning, Mrs. Tyrrell dusts the tables and unlocks the cupboards. The boys arrive about 8:15 and set the tables before school begins. Mrs. Tyrrell starts preparing the hot dish and fixes the bread and butter, dessert, and so forth. Dessert, by the way, has usually been prepared the afternoon before. If there's a big crowd to serve, Mrs. Tyrrell has an assistant who comes in about 9, helps with bread and butter, and sees that the many milk bottles are set out on the tables. And here's an interesting point. The dairy company that furnishes the milk provides straws with the half-pint bottles so that the children can drink the milk from the bottles and save the expense of glasses. Remember that this lunchroom is for elementary school children, youngsters who prefer to drink milk from a straw. Along about 11:15, the boys who are serving come in to get their lunches ahead of time. Then when the other children file in, the boys hustle around with hot servings for the whole roomful. Mrs. Tyrrell told me that it pays not to have too many helpers. Get too many youngsters on this job and they want to play. But a small number works in earnest. When the lunch is over, the boys clear the tables and put the empty milk bottles in the milk crates. Each volunteer serves 2 weeks. Well, you know, the children enjoy that lunchroom. At each table, there's a student host or hostess. This honor is conferred by Miss Luella Wagister, the principal. Needless to say, it's a much coveted honor. Judge, you asked me about the cooperation of the school board. I believe that one big reason Superintendent Frank Henry and the school board are inclined to favor this lunchroom project is that it's so well managed. Mrs. Tyrrell knows how to keep within her budget. Once in a great while, perhaps on a stormy day, she has more children to serve than she'd planned on. Then a well-stocked emergency shelf, such as the one we described the other day, comes to the rescue. The Northwood school menus provide nutritious yet simple foods. Whole milk, bread and butter, a vegetable, and often stewed fruits. One of the popular dishes is gravy with beef cut into small pieces, served on mashed potatoes. Another is corned beef hash, which, by the way, Mrs. Tyrrell makes from canned corned beef. The children always demand second helpings of corned beef hash. In fact, there are a good many second helpings at Northwood School. Food prices have dropped enough in the past 2 years so that Mrs. Tyrrell can afford to give second helpings to the hungry ones and still keep well within her budget. In the fall, she works overtime to make fresh applesauce for her crowd. They like it best with a dash of nutmeg and a piece of butter for seasoning. Then these crisp, cool days, they like baked beans, too, with whole wheat bread and butter. Now and then, Mrs. Tyrrell makes flat meat cakes, seasoned with a little onion, and serves them between large, round buns. This savory combination caused one 10-year-old to shout, "Mrs. Tyrrell is the best cook in the world."
High praise, Colonel.
Well, Judge, perhaps you'll visit our own experimental kitchen someday. Mrs. Tyrrell is listening this morning, you know, Judge, out in Michigan. Mrs. Tyrrell, I hereby extend to you a cordial invitation to have lunch with us the next time you're here. Now, instead of giving a menu this morning planned by our own nutrition staff, let's have 3 of the most popular of Mrs. Tyrrell's hot lunch menus. Perhaps you'd like to use them if your children come home for lunch. Menu number 1. Toasted hamburg rolls, chocolate milk, and fresh applesauce. Number 2, spaghetti with tomatoes, whole wheat bread and butter, milk, and fruit gelatin. Number 3, vegetable soup, raisin bread and butter, milk, and caramel pudding. I'd be glad to hear from members of other parent-teacher association groups. I know that in many cities, this important organization is finding ways to add to school equipment, to beautify school rooms and school grounds, and to provide better meals. Now let's write the recipe for toasted hamburg rolls, and then we'll be all set to hear the food news. To make toasted hamburg rolls, season chopped beef with very finely chopped onion and salt. Work in a little evaporated milk and form the meat into thin cakes about the size of flat rolls. Broil the meat quickly in a heavy skillet, first on one side and then on the other, or broil it under the flame of a broiling oven. Either method is good. The meat will cook in 5 minutes or less. Split, toast, and butter flat round rolls and fill them with the hot broiled meat cakes. And there you have toasted hamburg rolls. All right, Judge, give us the latest market information, will you?
Colonel, you know every day, especially in the food news, we try to save the American housewife money. And today I have a clean-cut example of a real money-saving tip. What I have in mind is eggs.
A good subject, Judge, in connection with our Food for Children program. What is this money-saving tip?
Well, some of us think we're pretty smart these days. And we are smart about some things. For example, we know that apples get ripe in the fall and that they can be placed in cool, refrigerated rooms and that they will stay fresh and fine and wholesome and appetizing all the year round. Any day during the year we want an apple, we know we can get one.
Yes.
But when it comes to the subject of eggs, we don't seem to be so smart. Here's what I mean. In the spring of the year, hens all over the country lay a lot of eggs, more than we can use. During the fall of the year, clear up through January, the hens just quit work, for the most part, and they don't lay enough eggs for us. Well, as a result, you would naturally expect eggs to be very cheap in the spring and very expensive in the late fall. And they would be, if it were not for the fact that we can apply the same sort of scientific methods to fresh eggs that we do to fresh apples. We can put them in refrigerated storage rooms, these fine, fresh spring eggs, and bring them out in the late fall for sale at low prices when eggs are scarce. Now, a lot of people have the mistaken notion that the number of weeks that an egg has been laid determines its age. Nothing could be further from the truth. An egg that has been properly kept in modern scientific refrigeration is a better egg than one that has been laid only a short time and improperly cared for. An egg can age more in one day, improperly cared for, in a high temperature, than in a month in cold storage. So now then, here's the situation we're up against right now. Fresh eggs are terribly scarce. They're selling for almost twice as much as storage eggs. You can save about 25 cents a dozen by buying eggs that were laid last spring. Eggs that have been kept nice and fresh at an even temperature of 30 to 32 degrees. I suggest you try some of these lower-priced eggs. I feel certain that you'll be agreeably surprised if you have any doubt at all in your mind about storage eggs.
Judge, that is a good tip. Good for the food budget.
I had that in mind, Colonel. In fact, it gives me a great deal of pleasure to tell people the truth about this egg situation so that they can save money on their food budgets.
Well, I find your information very reliable, Judge. But I think I've caught you this time. A week ago yesterday, you predicted that the first car of Florida oranges would be shipped before the end of that week, and you haven't said a word about it since.
Well, I was right. The first car was shipped late Saturday afternoon, but I forgot to mention it Monday or yesterday. I'm not going to make any further prophecy this morning, Colonel, but I've noticed that gelatin desserts are selling at bargain prices, so I really should mention them. They come all ready to use in a number of fruit flavors, such as raspberry, strawberry, lemon, and orange. All you have to do to make a dessert is to add boiling water according to the directions on the package. With fresh or canned fruit cut up in it, or with a little whipped cream on top, it makes a delicious dessert.
Thank you, Judge. Tomorrow I'm going to interview Judge Gordon on the subject of California grapes, and there will be two menus as the contribution of our culinary staff. I'll be with you again in the morning.
Thank you, Colonel. Our daily food comes to you each weekday morning at this time through the courtesy of the great Atlantic and Pacific Tea Company.